Each year, thousands of family members surround a weak link in their family and try to survive. It takes plenty of caring, a lot of time, and a great deal of sacrifice. And oftentimes, the family unit is still destroyed in the process. The problem? Alcoholism. It affects 1 out of 10 Virginians a year. But where do the families and the problem drinkers turn? There are medical retreats, psychiatric programs, rehabilitation treatment centers, inpatient programs, and self-help groups. All can claim their percentage of successes, but how do they compare, and which program will be the most successful for each individual? Welcome to Frankly Speaking. I'm Jonesy Emba at George Mason University. Recent research has revealed a substantial difference between professional treatment programs and the success of self-help groups like Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, and community treatment programs. With us today to discuss some of these differences is George Mason University sociologist and researcher Dr. Thomasina Borkman and a special guest, Norm, a recovering alcoholic who is successfully involved in a self-help program. Dr. Borkman, your research is centered on self-help treatment centers for alcoholics. What were some of the major differences you discovered between this type of program and other professional programs?
Let me say that these programs have been called social model alcohol recovery programs, and they have features of self-help groups from which they have been derived, but they are distinctly different. And they were not previously studied, although they have been funded by the federal government, county governments. So I want to say that as an introduction. Okay. They are quite different from professional programs, by which I mean programs that are run by people with degrees. I do not mean by professional someone who is an expert, because I think self-helpers are experts about alcoholism from their own experience, but the basis of the knowledge is different. A big difference is that the social model programs use the experiential expertise of the recovering alcoholic, whereas the professional programs are based on theories that come out of universities and schools and disciplines. A lot of the professional programs are much more highly structured, with clients receiving a tailor-made schedule of treatment the clients have little control. The staff take responsibility for setting up the kind of treatment and for sending the clients through the prescribed treatment in an orderly schedule of time. And the philosophy is that the professional is the expert that knows how to help the client get sober.
Okay, Norm, from your experience in a self-help group, how does the self-help group differ from a professional treatment program?
The self-help group, each individual is of equal status, whether they're newly recovering or been in the program for an extended period of time. Each member is helping every other member. If there's a professional in there, he is not in the capacity of a professional, he is in the capacity of a member. He's of equal rank with the others. We don't speak of ranks, but everyone contributes, everyone receives, everyone gives, and everyone takes.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Borkman, how do the principles of the self-help group, as well as some of the principles of a professional group, then work in the models that you studied, that you researched?
What Norm was just saying that about the self-help group applies in the social model programs that I studied. There are no professional staff that set up and control treatment. Instead, as in the self-help group, they call them service seekers. They don't even call them clients, to add another term. But they're the equivalent of like members. They are all equal. They are helping each other get sober, recover. And the staff are also recovering alcoholics who are maybe a little more senior in experience, but they are not regarded as senior in the sense of knowledgeable about treatment.
You have an administrative overhead in that, which we don't find in ours then.
Yes, you do. You have an administrative component. Uh-huh. You also have, what you don't have in the self-help group, are the staff do an awful lot of referrals, deliberate referrals to community agencies. If somebody needs to go on welfare, if somebody has a dental problem, the staff may even telephone the dental office or the welfare office and help the person explicitly get to the other services that they need.
So it's slightly more comprehensive in a community sense.
Yes, and it is similar in that sense to professional programs, in that all professional programs do a lot of other referrals for other additional services that are needed in the community.
Your comment about the term service members or service users.
Seekers.
Service seekers. Related to our earlier discussion about the different titles that people are given who seek assistance in this problem, from the professional programs calling them patients and sometimes clients, to self-help groups calling them members. Are there pejorative connotations to some of these terms, or?
It depends primarily upon the setting, the hospital setting. Everyone in a hospital is a patient. And so in the alcoholism unit within the hospital, they're called patients. And normally in an outpatient, they're a client. They're coming in, they're seeking services as a client. Mm-hmm. And then within the self-help groups, they're a member of a fellowship, which they join informally. When they come in, they have joined. With this new term that the doctors brought up, I rather like.
The service seeker?
The service seeker,
uh-huh.
Yes.
Another term I used in the research was prosumer, which is Alvin Toffler's term from his book, The Third Wave, to denote someone who is both a provider and a consumer simultaneously. And he used the term to refer to members of self-help groups who, mm-hmm, he says, are both receiving services, consuming, and providing services to each other at the same time. And I think it's a wonderful new term, prosumer, to denote the dynamics that go on in self-help groups and in these social model programs that I study. To return to your question, I personally think that there are very important connotations to patient, client, member, and I think there are terms in terms of connotations in terms of status. I think there are connotations in terms of how much responsibility the person has to get well, how much dependency is fostered,
exactly,
in the therapeutic relationship. And in fact, I would say just roughly, the most dependency is being a patient.
Mm-hmm.
Second is a client. Third is a service seeker. And least of all is a member
or
a prosumer.
Yeah.
And the members of the social model programs, the administrators, feel it's very important that their people are not called clients. They want to be called service seekers or prosumers because they feel that they are helping each other get well rather than having a separate staff, quote, give treatment or give something to the service seeker.
Well, that, and it carries a sense of responsibility with it,
yes,
not only to receive but to share, to,
yes,
give back.
it's more personalized, that a seeker is actively engaged, whereas a client is not actively, or a patient is not actively. It's more laid back term.
Passive.
Passive, yes.
Right?
Right.
There's the connotation of passivity to patient and client.
A help seeker then is automatically takes a responsibility to do something a patient does not.
And Norm, don't you think that's important in terms of the philosophy of the self-help group about recovery? Can you talk about that?
Well, being a member of a fellowship, we are a nation of joiners. And we like to be a member of something, and it's automatic within the group that once you come in, you are a member. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There is no other requirement.
Right.
I don't have to be white, black, old, young, male, female, just that I have a desire to stop drinking.
But isn't it thought that you have to take responsibility for your own recovery, that the group's not going to get you
right.
sober?
It's my desire, not the group's desire for me. I have the desire to stop drinking. Now the group will help, and I will help. I will give, I will receive. I will be a prosumer.
Uh-huh.
Well, in that sense, they provide not only support, but a model of people who have either gone through the same situation or are going through it as you are.
Right. I can rely on someone else's experiences. I can rely on the wisdom that other people have. I can absorb that within myself. I can take that. It's given to me.
Including, may I mention, the negative cases, right, of what not to do.
Right.
It's not just the positive. It's also the negative.
Yes, very definitely. And to have a member drop out and come back and to relate the experience of what happened in the relapse period. Here's what I was thinking, here's what I was doing, and here's what was happening. I wasn't following the program, I wasn't involved, and now I'm back. And that negative is very, very strong. It's very helpful to the individual. Thanks, say, aha.
Did your research models function similarly?
Yes, yes. In that they were very, very similar to the principles and the philosophy of the self-help. And let me say that more than 90% of the staff in each of the two places where I did the research were recovering alcoholics themselves who had been trained in the self-help group.
What did you see as some of the main benefits of a program like that?
Well, I think it works like the self-help program works.
But because of it works, why?
I think it works in important ways because people are prosumers rather than patients or clients. There is very powerful but difficult to measure love, which you find also in the self-help group. And the power of love is incredible in healing people and helping them get well. And you can't buy love and you can't manufacture it, and it has to be created voluntarily out of the people and their relationships with each other. And the social model and the self-help group are programs that create a lot of love.
And you can't understand it until you've experienced it. You have to experience it. It is a beautiful expression within the fellowship, the love that is there.
So how can I can't as a sociologist tell you how to measure the love, but it's there, and anyone, I think most people would see it. It's not invisible.
They sound like very successful programs, and we can only hope that they'll develop more of them across the country. I'm afraid we're out of time. I'd like to thank Dr. Thomasina Borkman, sociologist and researcher at George Mason University, and our special guest, Norm, for being with us today. You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public service program produced by George Mason University. For information about our guests or this program, please call area code 703-323-2138. This is Joan Ziemba at George Mason University, the State University in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening.